Good evening. Welcome to our visitors. It's always a pleasure to have people that come in and put the Lord first. We know that there's plenty of other things that people could be doing at this time. And so it's always refreshing to us to have new faces come in and be with us here in this place worshiping God. It's always a great opportunity. I love the fact that the elders allow just regular old men like me get up here to preach. It's a great opportunity in my mind for us to be able to articulate our thoughts, because when you go out into the world, you better know what you're saying, because they're going to have questions. They're going to have their own answers, their own versions of their answers. And so to be able to get up here, to be able to speak those things that God has put forth in the Bible is important to me. And I hope that if you haven't been able to take advantage of that, it's just a great way to, in front of a friendly audience, to get up there and to make mistakes, but to be able to articulate what God has set forth. And I hope we'll be able to do that today. If you'll turn, we'll be getting most of our stuff from Acts chapter 5 this evening. Acts chapter 5. Now, if you remember, the setting of Acts chapter 5 is actually where you have Ananias and Sapphira. We know that whole story. I'm not going to spend time on that. But the idea here is that the apostles were out there busy working in the kingdom. They were there setting examples, teaching, preaching, and whatnot. And what comes up is, you remember, they're arrested for doing good. They come in, and we'll talk a little bit about the setting. But then you have Gamaliel who speaks up and says, you might not want to kill them, because you're either fighting against God or they're going to die out on their own. So what we're going to do is we're going to try and dive in a little bit deeper into Gamaliel's counsel, understanding. I don't think he was a believer, obviously, at this time, but certainly he's one of those men that you kind of hope eventually obeyed the gospel. Maybe Paul, who was a student of his, came back and said, hey, let me show you. You're exactly right. But we're going to get into his counsel. But the idea here is we're going to look at it from the standpoint of the fool versus the wise. You have the fools being the high priest and his council, and then, of course, you have Gamaliel speaking up. And just if you can't read this, this is Proverbs chapter 12, verse 15. It says, the way of the foolish is right in his own eyes, but a wise man is he who listens to counsel. We'll see a kind of a double-edged sword briefly, but the high priests are absolutely fools. I mean, there's no way to look at it. Their actions are foolish. They refuse to listen to Gamaliel's counsel. Instead of leaving the apostles alone, they end up kicking him out. So let's get into a little bit of the setting here. In the beginning part, again, after Ananias and Sapphira, great fear is coming over the church. But I want to take the idea. One of the main points that Gamaliel has is the idea of spiritual versus physical. And I'm going to lay out, or the Bible lays out here in Acts chapter 5, these are the actions of spiritually minded people. These are the actions of those who God supports because of their love for God. Look at verse 12 with me. I'm going to read through verse 16. But I think this is important to get into when you start dealing with the accounts of that Gamaliel, the examples that he gives. Verse 12 says, at the hands of the apostles, many signs and wonders were taking place among the people, and they were all with one accord in Solomon's portico. And by the way, this is one reason why they get in trouble. We know the idea, and it could, I'm not exactly, you know, the internet lies sometimes, but I don't know if it's over here, over there, it doesn't matter. The point is that Solomon's portico looks more like this, where you're going out there and you have an audience every single day. And the people that go there to the temple are spiritually minded. And so the ones that the apostles are preaching to are the ones that come and sit there. You can imagine this scene, and then you see the high priest walk by saying, didn't we kill their leader? And yet they're still here, and they're blaming us for it, because in part of preaching the gospel, you have to talk about the fact that Jesus died for us and that he was murdered, hung on a cross by wicked hands, just like Peter's sermon. Coming back, and he was raised from the dead. Everything that the high priest said would not happen, happened. And so they go by every day, and they see a crowd listening to these apostles being healed. There's accounts where they just say, oh, let me just touch his shadow, the shadow of Peter. So this is the setting that we're dealing with. Let's pick up in verse 14. 13. But none of the rest dared to associate with them. However, the people held them in high esteem. So we're at the beginning of the church. It's not, you know, 50, 30, 60, whatever it is. We're relatively at the beginning. And so there is somewhat of a fear, you know, what's going to happen to me? And so the apostles with one accord are there showing why you need to have that confidence. Verse 14, and all the more believers in the Lord, multitudes of men and women were constantly added to their number to such an extent that they even carried the sick out into the streets and laid them on cots and pallets so that when Peter came by, at least his shadow might fall on any of them. Also, the people from the cities in the vicinity of Jerusalem were coming together, bringing people who were sick or afflicted with unclean spirits, and they were all being healed. These are the actions of the spiritually minded. Notice that they're not going out there. They're not leading revolts. They're not going out there and trying to convince people to have a political uprising. They're not a part of any social movement. They're going about doing good. That's what they're doing. They're going about preaching the gospel. They're converting souls to Christ. That's what they're doing. And then now we get into the idea, if you keep reading, and I'll let you read as I kind of discuss the highlights that I want to focus on. But you go in there and enter the fool. The fool will come in and can't see the truth if it's smacking him in the face. The fool will come in and act rash, will act out of control. And so instead of saying, you know what, there's more miracles. There's these people that were scattered when their leader died, and now they're back bolder than ever. And they're doing things that cannot happen by man. Instead of the fool seeing that for what it is, these people must be telling the truth, must be from God. What do? They arrest them. The fool does foolish things. The fool arrests the apostles. Then you have the account where they're going in at night. And the angel comes in and frees them. And then they come in and the next day they're like, all right, we're going to talk to them. Like, they're not there. The angel had let them go. Where did they go? They went back to Solomon's portico and they were doing the same thing that they had always done. They were out there preaching a spiritual message. So what does the fool do again? The fool goes out there and comes back and arrests them again, but in a peaceful way, because at this point they know something at least is up, and they can't do anything in public, because when you're going about doing good, healing people that otherwise would never be healed, the lame walking, people on their deathbeds, people that were blind, all these things, and you take that away from them because of your ego, you're not going to have a good consequence coming your way. And so peacefully, they arrest these men and they come in, they talk to them. Didn't we tell you to quit talking? Didn't we tell you to quit preaching? Didn't we tell you to quit doing these things? And they're getting ready to kill them because their answer was, we better obey God rather than men. Well, a fool also has another problem. Their ego is overinflated, and so any little answer will set them off if it's not exactly what they wanted to hear. And so now you have this idea that those high priests, the leaders, the religious elite that should know the law, should know the will of God, can't see truth 2 feet in front of them, are ready to kill them. And now that's where we enter Gamaliel. This is where Gamaliel comes in and uses logic, uses reason, but he also does something else that's very wise. Notice that in Gamaliel's actions, not only does he start to come in with his with the defense or the idea, the strategy, but notice that very wisely he sends the apostles out of the audience. He takes them away, says, send them out, let me deal with it. I want to go through and I want to read Gamaliel's account, his defense, and I want to make sure that we don't miss out any of the little details, because there's a lot going on here. So let's pick up in verse 33 of Acts chapter 5. But when they heard this, they were cut to the quick and intended to kill them. But a Pharisee named Gamaliel, a teacher of the law, respected by all people, stood up in the council and gave orders to put the men outside for a short time. What does that do? It deflates the ego. It takes away any tension that could arise. Because now these fools don't have to save face. Because one thing that you got is you got a bunch of fools there together that can just pat themselves on the back. And nobody is foolish enough to go against the wise counsel of Gamaliel. So he very wisely diffuses the situation and comes back and says, and he said to them, "Men of Israel, take care of what you propose to do with these men. For some time ago, Theudas rose up claiming to be somebody, and a group of about 400 men joined up with him. But he was killed, and all his followers, all who followed him were dispersed and came to nothing. After this man, Judas of Galilee rose up in the days of the census and drew away some people after him. He too perished, and all those who followed him were scattered. So in the present case, I say to you, stay away from these men and let them alone. For if this plan or action is of men, it will be overthrown. But if it is of God, you will not be able to overthrow them. Or else you may even be found fighting against God." And of course, the fool, if you read through here, the fool can't help himself. And so what do? Instead of just completely saying, "Yeah, that absolutely makes sense. I don't want to take any chances. Hey, y'all go away and God will deal with you." No, they can't help themselves. They say, "Okay, we got you. We're going to flog them. We're going to beat them and then send them away." But here's the actions or the counsel. He brings up two examples of men from the past. You have two movements, and we're going to be talking about, are these spiritual or are these physical? Now, Gamaliel doesn't talk about that in those terms. But if you go back and you look at the example of what he's trying to say, that's exactly what he means. You're either, these people are in there carnally minded, in there fighting for themselves, or they're spiritually minded on God's side and there's nothing you can do about it. And so now we're going to talk about these. Now, the first one, Theudas. I read everywhere, not everywhere, but almost as much as what James did on this one, which is everywhere. And it doesn't, there's not a whole lot there about Theudas. There's Theudas that happened sometime in the 40s, which would have been post this time period. So I don't think that's the same one. I think Theudas is probably just like Steve or John. It's a common name. But obviously, it's enough of an event that happened that everybody knows who Theudas was and what he did. 400 people, although not the multitudes of what Jesus had, but 400 people that are very zealous came in, and that's noticeable, especially when you look at their actions. So Theudas is one of those ones that pretty much you have it in the book of Acts. You can read what he did, and that's about it. And so we're going to focus more time on Judas of Galilee. So let me come back here, make sure I'm right here. So looking at this, one of the things real quick about Theudas, you notice the idea, and I want to compare this to what the apostles were doing. Gamaliel talks about the idea that Theudas was out there promoting himself, bragging himself, trying to put himself forward. Think about it. Who did the apostles and even Jesus, who did they always try and give glory to? It was always God the Father. And eventually the apostles would obviously glorify Jesus because Jesus was glorified by God himself. But the idea is that the apostles never took money. The apostles, all but John, died because of what they talked about. And they went about doing good. These people, we're going to talk about in the terms of history, they were not guilty of doing good. And so the egos of Theudas and, of course, of Judas of Galilee, they're both there. And you can see their actions. You can see where their minds are not. And it's certainly not physical. And that's Gamaliel's point, isn't it? It's the idea of you can see their carnal mindedness and God wipes them out. God takes them away. God deals with them however he does. And so you look at what the apostles, the works of the apostles, we're still benefiting from those works today. Has their movement died out? No. The church is thriving. The church is adding numbers to their souls even today. More souls are being added to the church. You can tell that God is going to take care of the spiritual and God is going to deal with the physical. Let's look at Judas of Galilee. Also a well-known person. I think the one that Josephus talks about in his book of Antiquities. You look at chapter or book 18. He goes in there in chapter 1, talks about a lot of these things that Judas was actually guilty of. This is not a man, and you can read through, again, what he was guilty of. But he was certainly not a man that was spiritually minded. And you think about it. Gamaliel talks about the idea that he was arguing against a census, which means taxation back in the ancient world. Well, again, I'm speaking from what I read from Gamaliel's account, from Josephus' account. Judas sees that opportunity that the Romans are taking advantage of them as what it means to be slavery. Okay? Basically, they're submitting to slavery again, although I don't think that's necessarily true. When you think about Jesus' answer about render to the things, is it lawful to pay the tax to Caesar? And Jesus' answer, short answer, is yes, it's okay. Give Caesar his stuff. It's okay, and give God what's due God. And there's nothing wrong with that inherently. And so the idea here is that when Judas comes in, he takes this this movement, and he goes in there and he talks about, he grabs other people. He grabs Pharisees. He ends up creating a huge movement, and they go around, and they're extremely zealous. But I'm going to give, if you'll bear with me, I'm going to read from Josephus, his account. Now, obviously, Josephus is a historian, but I think he's somewhat unbiased as far as whether it happened or didn't happen. And certainly people could argue this. But in his Book of Antiquities, in Book 18, Josephus says this about Judas. Says, they also said that God would not otherwise, and speaking of the conversation between Judas and Sadoc, they also said that God would not otherwise be assisting to them than upon their joining with one another in such counsels as might be successful and for their own advantage. And this especially if they would set about great exploits and not grow weary in executing the same. So men received what they said with pleasure. And this bold attempt proceeded to a great height. All sorts of misfortunes also sprang from these men. And the nation was infected with this doctrine to an incredible degree. One violent war came upon another, and we lost our friends, which used to alleviate our pains. There were also very great robberies and murder of principal men. This was done in pretense, indeed, for the public welfare, but in reality for the hopes of gain to themselves, whence arose seditions from them murders of men, which sometimes fell on those of their own people. Does that sound anything remotely close to what the apostles were doing? Instead of murdering, the apostles went out and healed. Josephus talks about in the War of the Jews the idea that zealots were such a problem that they didn't just bring fear to the Romans. They actually would take daggers into public places like what we saw and just randomly go up and stab people and assassinate people that didn't see their idea or that they felt were sympathizers to the Romans. That's what the zealots were doing. And that's, of course, you can imagine the fear en masse. Just think about what's going on in our nation today that happens far, miles away from us today. These people, every day in the marketplace, had to watch themselves because you have random people, random zealots going in there and stabbing people. That's why I think when you look at Barabbas, when he was considered a murderer and an insurrectionist, I don't think Barabbas was going in the middle of the night so he could steal a necklace or two. I think Barabbas was an insurrectionist taking part in what these zealots do. What Gamaliel is pointing out that Judas of Galilee was doing. The idea of going out there and teaching people to go and it's okay to murder people that don't agree with you. Contrast that with the spiritually minded apostles healing the sick, preaching salvation from sin, all those things, a very, very peaceful doctrine. And this is, something that you can go back in history and compare the two. Now, the idea, I'm going to touch a little bit more on this idea of zealousness versus zealots. To be zealous is to have a great zeal. Remember when Jesus came in John chapter 2, it talks about the idea that Jesus was zealous. He had a great zeal for the house. And what did he do? No other way to say it. He violently drove out the money changers, flipped their table, cracked whips to get them out of there. That's not a, could you please exit right here, go out that gate. No, he drove them out with a great zeal. That's zealousness, but what was the context? Is it a taxation? Is it a Roman social movement? No, they were profaning, spiritually profaning the house of the Lord. There's a difference. Jesus came out and was offended by what they were doing spiritually to God's house. So he drove them out. There's an example of proper godly zeal that Jesus showed. You also have in history the idea of the Maccabean revolt. When you go back and you look at some of the things, we don't have the time to get into the details tonight, but the idea here is that the whole Maccabean revolt started with Antiochus IV ordering or allowing the sacrifice of pigs on the altar of God. When a bully is just bully, eventually they cross a line and those who are bullied stand up and punch them in the mouth. And so what happens? Matthias comes back and executes all the Romans that were there, cleans out the temple and all that stuff. And then he flees because he knows he's going to die. But here's the spiritually minded, because I think the fact that I believe that Jesus celebrated the Festival of Lights, which in a sense, I would say he endorses that whole situation. But when Matthias goes out, he doesn't do it for personal gain. He's not worried about his gain. They say Josephus argues that he gets caught out in the wilderness, and so that he does not profane the Sabbath, which is the day they got caught. They just allow themselves to be slaughtered so that they would not break the law of God. And then you have Judas Maccabee coming back and going out there and driving the Greeks completely out. And then what does he come back and do? It's not necessarily for personal gain. He comes back and he purifies the temple. It's spiritually minded. Those things happen for people that have a zeal, but a spiritual zeal. And sometimes there is physical things that happen. Do you allow yourselves to succumb to the movements of today? There's a lot of disgusting evil that's coming around. Do you have a zeal for God? Do you stand up and do you take a stand spiritually? We don't go around and we don't kill people. We don't do it. Christians don't do it. The Crusades, not a Christian movement. That was something completely different in history. But if you look at true Christianity, what we do is we go out there and we see lost souls. We're out there to try and preach the gospel to them and bring them there. That's what we have there. That's the movement that we're a part of. It's not out there to worry about are tax dollars going to this or that? Are we, do we need to stand up for this person's rights or that person's right? That's not what the Bible teaches. There is one movement or one thing that the spiritual movement of God deals with. And that is the battle that we have against sin. It's all that matters. It's not us versus them or us versus them. It's us versus sin. It's the world versus Satan. There are some people who have aligned themselves for Satan, but don't we try and go and save their souls as well through the gospel? That's the message that we have. The idea of a great zeal for what we're dealing with is how many people can we reach with the gospel? Do we go about doing good for others? We're not interested in winning wars. God will take care of that. Remember what Gamaliel said? If it's of God, nothing can stop it. Anybody that fights us, because I believe we're a part of that spiritual movement. Anybody that fights against us, guess who they're fighting against? God. If God's for us, who could be against us? There's nothing that can stop us what we're doing except our own decision of inaction. It's a straight up spiritual movement that we're a part of. It's interesting that Gamaliel uses those examples. Very, very violent, very self-serving examples of what a zealot does. And what happened to them? They died out. Yeah, they had some success. Judas, he talks about Judas was the founder of the zealot sect. That's what Josephus says. We know that the zealots, what was their outcome? They eventually took a stand at Masada and they were wiped out. God will deal with them. So the question is, what movement are you a part of? You cannot be a part of the movement if you don't accept the gospel. The gospel is, do you know what the word says? Have you heard it before? Do you believe that this is from the word of God? Now, I think there's so much evidence. The fact that the historicity of the Bible is so accurate is a great example that this is from God. Gamaliel is exactly right. Now, whether he believed eventually, I don't know. But man, he made a great point. If it's spiritual, you need to be a part of that. You don't need to be fighting against it. Have you put the Lord on in baptism? Because you're not part of that movement. You don't own Christ, and Christ does not own you. But if you are redeemed by the blood in baptism, then you can put on Christ, and you can carry that banner that he has. Maybe you've kind of succumbed to the physical side. Maybe those physical temptations have gotten you, whether it be for personal gain or self-pleasure or whatever it may be. Maybe fear of what man might do to you, and so maybe you were a little bit timid when you should have been zealous. Whatever it is that you need, there's a great, great group of people here to welcome you, to help you get back on that path. Whatever your need is, why don't you come now as we stand and sing.